Chapter 19. Next morning, I bought clothes. The proprietor of the shop Inspector Supervisor Skyart had recommended was on the verge of throwing me out when my bank balance flashed onto her console, unbidden, I suspected, station sparing her embarrassment, and simultaneously telling me how closely it was watching me. I needed gloves, certainly, and if I was going to play the part of the spendthrift wealthy tourist, I would need to buy more than that. But before I could speak up to say so, the proprietor brought out bolts of brocade, sateen, and velvet in a dozen colours. Purple and orange-brown, three shades of green, gold, pale yellow and icy blue, ash-grey, deep red.
"You can't wear those clothes," she told me, authoritative, as a subordinate handed me tea, managing to mostly conceal her disgust at my bare hands.
The station had scanned me and provided my measurements, so I needed do nothing. A half-litre of tea, two excruciatingly sweet pastries, and a dozen insults later, I left in an orange-brown jacket and trousers, an icy white stiff shirt underneath, and dark grey gloves, so thin and soft I might almost have still been bare-handed. Fortunately, current fashion favoured jackets and trousers cut generously enough to hide my weapon. The rest, two more jackets and pairs of trousers, two pairs of gloves, half a dozen shirts, and three pairs of shoes, would be delivered to my lodgings by the time, the proprietor told me, I was done visiting the temple. I exited the shop, turned a corner onto the main concourse, crowded at this hour with a throng of Rajai going in and out of the temple, or the palace proper, visiting the no doubt expensive and fashionable tea shops, or merely being seen in the right company. When I had walked through before, on my way to the clothes shop, people had stared and whispered, or just raised their eyebrows. Now it seemed I was mostly invisible, except for the occasional similarly well-dressed Rajai, who dropped her gaze to my jacket front, looking for signs of my family affiliation, eyes widening in surprise to see none. Or the child, one small gloved hand clutching the sleeve of an accompanying adult, who turned to frankly stare at me until she was drawn past and out of sight. Inside the temple, citizens crowded the flowers and incense, junior priests young enough to look like children to my eyes, bringing baskets and boxes of replacements. As an ancillary, I wasn't supposed to touch temple offerings or make them myself. But no one here knew that. I washed my hands in the basin and bought a handful of bright yellow-orange flowers and a piece of the sort of incense I knew Lieutenant Orne had favoured. There would be a place within the temple set aside for prayers for the dead, and days that were auspicious for making such offerings, though this wasn't such a day, and as a foreigner, I shouldn't have Rajai dead to remember. Instead, I walked into the echoing main hall, where Amaat stood, a jewelled emanation in each hand, already knee-deep in flowers, a hill of red and orange and yellow as high as my head, growing incrementally as worshippers tossed more blooms on the pile. When I reached the front of the crowd, I added my own, made the gestures and mouthed the prayer, dropped the incense into the box that when it filled would be emptied by more junior priests. It was only a token. It would return to the entrance to be purchased again. If all the incense offered had been burned, the air in the temple would have been too thick with smoke to breathe, and this wasn't even a festival day. As I bowed to the god, a brown-uniformed ship's captain came up beside me. She made to throw her handful of flowers, and then stopped, staring at me. The fingers of her empty left hand twitched just slightly. Her features reminded me of Hundred Captain Rubren Osk, though where Captain Rubren had been lanky and worn her hair long and straight, this captain was shorter and thick-bodied, hair clipped close. A glance at her jewellery confirmed this captain was a cousin of hers, a member of the same branch of the same house. I remembered that Anaanda Miatnaai hadn't been able to predict Captain Rubren's allegiance and didn't want to tug too hard on the web of clientage and contacts the Hundred Captain belonged to. I wondered if that was still true, or if Osk had come down on one side or the other. It didn't matter. The captain still stared, presumably receiving by now answers to her queries. Station or her ship would tell her I was a foreigner, and the captain would, I presumed, lose interest. Or not, if she learned about Cyverdon. I didn't wait to see which was the case, but finished my prayer and turned to work my way through the people waiting to make offerings. Off the sides of the temple were smaller shrines. In one, three adults and two children stood around an infant they had laid at the breast of Art. The image being constructed to allow this, its arm crooked under the gods often sworn by breasts, hoping for an auspicious destiny, or at least some sign of what the future might hold for the child. All the shrines were beautiful, glittering with gold and silver, glass and polished stone. The whole place rumbled and roared with the echoes of hundreds of quiet conversations and prayers. No music. I thought of the nearly empty temple of Ikt, the divine of Ikt telling me of hundreds of singers long gone. I was nearly 2 hours in the temple, admiring the shrines of subsidiary gods. The entire place must have taken up whatever part of this side of the station was not occupied by the palace proper. The two were certainly connected, since Anna-Anda-Miatna-I acted as priest here at regular intervals, though the accesses wouldn't be obvious. I left the mortuary shrine for last, partly because it was the part of the temple most likely to be crowded with tourists, and partly because I knew it would make me unhappy. It was larger than the other subsidiary shrines, nearly half the size of the vast main hall, filled with shelves and cases crowded with offerings for the dead. All food or flowers, all glass. Glass teacups holding glass tea, glass steam rising above. Mounds of delicate glass roses and leaves, 2 dozen different kinds of fruit, fish and greens that nearly gave off a phantom aroma of my supper the night before. You could buy mass-produced versions of these in shops well away from the main concourse and put them in your home shrine, for gods or for the dead, but these were different, each one a carefully detailed work of art, each one conspicuously labelled with the names of the living donor and the dead recipient, so every visitor could see the pious mourning and wealth and status on display. I probably had enough money to commission such an offering, but if I did so, and labelled it with the appropriate names, it would be the last thing I ever did, and doubtless the priests would refuse it. I had already considered sending money to Lieutenant Orne's sister, but that too would attract unwelcome curiosity. Maybe I could arrange it so that whatever was left would go to her, once I had done what I'd come here to do, but I suspected that would be impossible. Still, thinking it, and thinking of my luxurious room and expensive, beautiful clothes, gave me a twinge of guilt. At the temple entrance, just as I was about to step out onto the concourse, a soldier stepped into my path, human, not an ancillary. She bowed.
"Excuse me. I have a message from the citizen Vel'Osk, captain of Mercy of Kalar."
The captain who had stared at me as I made my offering to Amaat. The fact she'd sent a soldier to accost me said she thought me worth more trouble than a message through station systems, but not enough to send a lieutenant or approach me herself. Though that might also have been due to a certain social awkwardness, she preferred to push off onto this soldier. It was hard not to notice the slight clumsiness of a sentence designed to avoid a courtesy title. "Your pardon, citizen," I said. "I don't know the citizen Vel'Osk." The soldier gestured, slight, deferential apology.
"This morning's cast indicated the captain would have a fortuitous encounter today. When she noticed you making your offering, she was sure you were who was meant."
Noticing a stranger in the temple, in a place as big as this, was hardly a fortuitous encounter. I was slightly offended that the captain hadn't even tried to put more effort into it. Mere seconds of thought would have produced something better. "What is the message, citizen?"
"The captain customarily takes tea in the afternoons," said the soldier, bland and polite, and named a shop just off the concourse. "She would be honored if you would join her."
The time and place suggested the sort of social meeting that was, in reality, a display of influence and associations, and where ostensibly unofficial business would be done. Captain Vel had no business with me, and she would gain no advantage in being seen with me. "If the captain wants to meet Citizen Syverdin," I began.
"It wasn't Captain Syverdin the captain encountered in the temple," the soldier answered,
again, slightly apologetic. Surely she knew how transparent her errand was.
But, of course, if you wanted to bring Captain Syverdin, Captain Vell would be honored to meet her.
Of course. And even houseless and broke, Syverdin would get a personal invitation from someone she knew, not a message through station systems, or a this-edge-of-insulting invite from Captain Vell's errand-runner. But it was exactly what I had wanted. "I can't speak for Citizen Syverdin, of course," I said. "Do please thank Captain Vell for the invitation." The soldier bowed and left. Off the concourse, I found a shop selling cartons of what was advertised merely as lunch, which turned out to be fish again, stewed with fruit. I took it back to my room and sat at the table, eating, considering that console on the wall, a visible link with station. Station was as smart as I had ever been, when I had still been a ship. Younger, yes, less than half my age, but not to be dismissed, not at all. If I was discovered, it would almost certainly be because of Station. Station hadn't detected my ancillary implants, all of which I had disabled and hidden as best I could. If it had, I would have already been under arrest. But Station could see at least the basics of my emotional state, could, with enough information about me, tell when I was lying, was certainly watching me closely. But emotional states from Station's view, from mine when I was Justice of Torren, were just assemblages of medical data, data that were meaningless without context. If, in my present dismal mood, I had just stepped off a ship, Station would possibly see it, but not understand why I felt the way I did, and would not be able to draw any conclusions from it. But the longer I was here, the more of me Station saw, the more data Station would have. It would be able to assemble its own context, its own picture of what I was, and would be able to compare that to what it thought I ought to be. The danger would be if those two didn't match. I swallowed a mouthful of fish, looked at the console. "Hello," I said. "The AI who's watching me?" "Honored Gaiad Breck," said Station from the console, a placid voice. "Hello. I am usually addressed as Station." "Station, then." Another bite of fish and fruit. "So you are watching me?" I was genuinely worried about Station surveillance. I wouldn't be able to hide that from Station. "I watch everyone, Honored. Is your leg still troubling you?" It was, and doubtless Station could see me favor it, see the effects of it in the way I sat now. "Our medical facilities are excellent. I'm sure one of our doctors could find a solution to your problem." An alarming prospect. But I could make that look entirely understandable. "No, thank you. I've been warned about Ratcha'i medical facilities. I'd rather endure a little inconvenience and still be who I am." Silence, for a moment. Then Station asked, "Do you mean the aptitudes, or re-education? Neither would change who you are, and you aren't eligible for either one, I assure you." "All the same," I set my utensil down, "we have a saying where I come from. Power requires neither permission nor forgiveness." "I have never met anyone from the Garantate before," said Station. I had, of course, been depending on that. "I suppose your misapprehension is understandable. Foreigners often don't understand what the Ratcha'i are really like." "Do you realize what you've just said? Literally, that the uncivilized don't understand civilization? Do you realize that quite a lot of people outside Ratch space consider themselves to be civilized?" The sentence was nearly impossible in Ratcha'i, a self-contradiction. I waited for, "That wasn't what I meant," but it didn't come. Instead, Station said, "Would you have come here if not for Citizen Syverdin?" "Possibly," I answered, knowing I could not lie outright to Station, not with it watching me so closely, knowing that now any anger or resentment, or any apprehension about Ratcha'i officials that I felt would be attributed to my being resentful and fearful of the Ratch. "Is there any music in this very civilized place?" "Yes," answered Station, "though I don't think I have any music from the Garantate." "If I only ever wanted to hear music from the Garantate," I said, acid, "I would never have left there." This did not seem to faze Station.
Would you prefer to go out or stay in?
I preferred to stay in.
Station called up an entertainment for me. New this year, but a comfortably familiar sort of thing. A young woman of humble family, with hopes of clientage to a more prestigious house. A jealous rival who undermines her, deceiving the putative patron as to her true, noble nature. The eventual recognition of the heroine's superior virtue, her loyalty through the most terrible trials, even uncontracted as she is, and the downfall of her rival, culminating in a long-awaited clientage contract and 10 minutes of triumphant singing and dancing. The last 11 such interludes over 4 separate episodes. It was a very small-scale work. Some of these ran for dozens of episodes that added up to days or even weeks. It was mindless. But the songs were nice, and improved my mood considerably. I had nothing urgent to do until word came of Syverdon's appeal, and if Syverdon's request for an audience and for me to accompany her was granted, that would mean another, even longer wait. I rose, brushed my new trousers straight, put on shoes and jacket. "Station," I said, "do you know where I can find the Citizen Syverdon Vendor Eye?"
"The Citizen Syverdon Vendor Eye," answered Station from the console, in its always even voice, "is in the security office on sub-level 9.
"Excuse me?"
"There was a fight," said Station.
"Normally security would have contacted her family, but she has none here." I wasn't her family, of course, and she could have called for me if she'd wanted me. Still.
"Can you direct me to the security office on sub-level 9, please?"
"Of course, honored." The office on sub-level 9 was tiny. Nothing more really than a console, a few chairs, a table with mismatched tea things, and some storage lockers. Syverdon sat on a bench at the back wall. She wore grey gloves, and an ill-fitting jacket and trousers of some stiff, coarse fabric, the sort of thing extruded on demand, not sewn, and probably produced in a preset range of sizes. My own uniforms when I had been a ship had been made that way, but had looked better. Of course, I'd sized each one properly. It had been a simple thing for me to do at the time. The front of Syverdon's grey jacket was spattered with blood, and one glove was soaked with it. Blood was crusted on her upper lip, and the small, clear shell of a corrective sat across the bridge of her nose. Another corrective lay across a bruise forming on one cheek. She stared dully ahead, not looking up at me or at the security officer who had admitted me.
"Here's your friend, citizen," said security.
Syverdon frowned, looked up around the small space. Then she looked more closely at me.
"Breck. Artra's tits. That's you. You look..."
She blinked, opened her mouth to finish the sentence, stopped again, took another somewhat ragged breath.
"Different," she concluded. "Really, really different."
"I only bought clothes. What happened to you?"
"There was a fight,"
said Syverdon. "Just happened on its own, did it?" I asked.
"No,"
she admitted.
"I was assigned a place to sleep, but there was already someone living there. I tried to talk to her, but I could hardly understand her."
"Where did you sleep last night?" I asked. She looked down at the floor.
"I managed."
Looked up again at me, at the security officer beside me.
"But I wasn't going to be able to keep managing."
"You should have come to us, citizen," said security. "Now you've got a warning on your record. Not something you want."
"And her opponent?" I asked. Security made a negating gesture. It wasn't something I was supposed to ask.
"I'm not managing very well on my own, am I?"
said Syverdon, miserably.
Heedless of Sky at always disapproval, I bought Syverdon new gloves and jacket, dark green, still the sort of thing that was extruded on demand, but at least it fit better, and the higher quality was obvious. The grey ones were past laundering, and I knew the supply office wouldn't issue more clothes so soon. When Syverdon had put them on and sent the old ones for recycling, I said, "Have you eaten? I was planning to offer you supper when Station told me where you were." She'd washed her face, and now looked more or less reputable, give or take the bruising under the corrective on her cheek.
"I'm not hungry," she said.
A flicker of something, regret, annoyance, I couldn't quite tell, flashed across her face. She crossed her arms and quickly uncrossed them again, a gesture I hadn't seen in months. "Can I offer you tea, then, while I eat?"
"I would love tea," she said, with emphatic sincerity.
I remembered that she had no money, had refused to let me give her any. All that tea we had carried with us was in my luggage. She had taken none of it with her when we'd parted the night before, and tea, of course, was an extra, a luxury. Which wasn't really a luxury, not by Cyverdon standards anyway, likely not by any Ratchai standards. We found a tea shop, and I bought something rolled in a sheet of algae, and some fruit and tea, and we took a table in a corner. "Are you sure you don't want anything?" I asked. "Fruit?" She feigned lack of interest in the fruit, and then took a piece.
"I hope you had a better day than I did."
"Probably." I waited a moment to see if she wanted to talk about what had happened, but she said nothing, just waited for me to continue. "I went to the temple this morning and ran into some ship's captain who stared quite rudely and then sent one of her soldiers after me to invite me to tea."
"One of her soldiers?"
Cyverdon realized her arms were crossed, uncrossed them, picked up her teacup, set it down again.
"Ancillary?"
"Human, I'm pretty sure." Cyverdon lifted an eyebrow briefly.
"You shouldn't go. She should have invited you herself. You didn't say yes, did you?"
"I didn't say no." Three Ratchai entered the tea shop laughing. All wore the dark blue of dock authority. One of them was Dao Sate, Inspector Supervisor Skyat's assistant. She didn't seem to notice me. "I don't think the invitation was on my account. I think she wants me to introduce her to you."
"But..."
She frowned, looked at the bowl of tea in one green-gloved hand, brushed the front of the new jacket with the other.
"What's her name?"
"Vel Osk."
"Osk? Never heard of them."
She took another drink of tea. Dao Sate and her friends bought tea and pastries, sat at a table on the other side of the room, talking animatedly.
"Why would she want to meet me?"
I raised an eyebrow, incredulous.
"You're the one who believes any unlikely event is a message from God," I pointed out. "You're lost for 1,000 years, found by accident, disappear again, and then turn up at a palace with a rich foreigner, and you're surprised when that gets attention."
She made an ambiguous gesture.
"Absent Vendai as a functioning house, you need to establish yourself somehow."
She looked so dismayed, just for the shortest instant, that I thought my words had offended her in some way. But then she seemed to recover herself.
"If Captain Vel wanted my goodwill, or cared at all about my opinion, she made a bad start by insulting you."
Her old arrogance lurked behind those words, a startling difference from her barely suppressed dejection up to now. "What about that inspector supervisor?" I asked. "Skyat, right? She seemed polite enough, and you seemed to know who she was."
"All the Orwares seem polite enough,"
Cyverdon said, disgustedly. Over her shoulder, I watched Dao Sate laugh at something one of her companions had said.
"They seem totally normal at first," Cyverdon went on, "but then they go having visions or deciding something's wrong with the universe and they have to fix it, or both at once. They're all insane."
She was silent a moment, and then turned to see what I was looking at, turned back.
"Oh, her. Isn't she kind of provincial-looking?"
I turned my full attention on Cyverdon, looked at her. She looked down at the table.
"I'm sorry. That was just wrong. I don't have any..."
"I doubt," I interrupted, "that her pay allows her to wear clothes that make her look different."
"That's not what I meant."
Cyverdon looked up, distress and embarrassment obvious in her expression.
"But what I meant was bad enough. I was just surprised. All this time, I guess I've just assumed you were an ascetic. It just surprised me."
An ascetic? I could see why she would have assumed that, but not why it would have mattered that she was wrong. Unless...
You're not jealous? I asked, incredulous.
Well dressed or not, I was just as provincial-looking as Dao Sait, just from a different province.
No!
And then the next moment...
Well, yes.
But not like... that. I realized then that it wasn't just other Ratcha'ai who might get the wrong impression from that gift of clothes I'd just made. Even though Cyverdon surely knew I couldn't offer clientage, even though I knew that if she thought about it for longer than 30 seconds, she would never want from me what that gift implied. Surely she couldn't think that I'd meant that. Yesterday, the inspector supervisor told me I was in danger of giving you false expectations, or of giving others the wrong impression. Cyverdon made a scornful noise.
That would be worth considering, if I had the remotest interest in what Orware thinks.
I raised an eyebrow, and she continued in a more contrite tone.
I thought I'd be able to handle things by myself. But all last night and all today, I've just been wishing I'd stayed with you. I guess it's true. All citizens are taken care of. I didn't see anyone starving or naked.
Her face momentarily showed disgust.
With those clothes, and the skell, just skell, all the time, very carefully measured out, I didn't think I'd mind. I mean, I don't mind skell, but I could hardly choke it down.
I could guess the mood she'd been in when she'd gotten into that fight.
I think it was knowing I wasn't going to get anything else for weeks and weeks, and...
She said with a rueful smile,
knowing I'd have had better if I'd asked to stay with you.
So, you want your old job back then? I asked.
Fuck yes,
she said, emphatic and relieved, loud enough for the party across the room to hear and turn disapproving glances our way. Language, citizen. I took another bite of my algae roll, relieved I discovered on several counts. Are you sure you wouldn't rather take your chances with Captain Vell?
You can have tea with whoever you want, said Cyverdon, but she should have invited you herself.
Your manners are 1,000 years old, I pointed out.
Manners are manners, she said, indignant. Like I said, you can have tea with whoever you want.
Inspector Supervisor Skyat entered the shop, saw Dao Sait, and nodded to her, but came over to where Cyverdon and I sat. Hesitated just an instant, noticing the correctives on Cyverdon's face, but then pretended she hadn't seen them.
Citizen, honoured?
Inspector Supervisor, I replied. Cyverdon merely nodded.
I'm hosting a small get-together tomorrow evening.
She named a place.
Just tea, nothing formal. I'd be honoured if you both came.
Cyverdon laughed outright.
Manners, she said again. Ah, manners.
Skyat frowned, nonplussed. Yours is the second such invitation today, I explained. Citizen Cyverdon tells me the first was less than entirely courteous.
I hope mine met her exacting standards, Skyat said. Who failed them?
Captain Vell, I answered. Of Mercy of Calor? To someone who didn't know her well, Skyat probably looked as though she had no real opinions about Captain Vell.
Well, I admit I intended to introduce you, citizen, to friends of mine who might be useful to you, that you might find Captain Vell's acquaintance more congenial.
You must have a low opinion of me,
Cyverdon said.
It's possible, said Skyat,
and oh, how strange it was to hear her speak with such gravity, as I had known her 20 years ago, but different,
that Captain Vell's approach was less than entirely respectful toward the honoured Breck, but in other respects, I suspect you'd find her sympathetic.
Before Cyverdon could answer, Skyat continued,
I have to go. I hope to see you both tomorrow evening.
She looked over at the table where her assistant sat, and all three of the adjunct inspectors there stood and left the shop behind her. Cyverdon was silent a moment, watching the door they had exited from.
Well,
I said. Cyverdon looked back to me. I guess if you're coming back, I'd better pay you so you can buy some more decent clothes. An expression I couldn't quite read flashed across Cyverdon's face.
Where did you get yours?
I don't think I'll pay you that much, I said. Cyverdon laughed, took a drink of her tea, another piece of fruit. I wasn't at all certain she'd really eaten. Are you sure you don't want anything else? I asked.
I'm sure. What is that thing?
She looked toward the last bit of my algae-covered supper. No idea. I hadn't ever seen anything quite like it in the Ratch. It must have been recently invented, or an idea imported from some other place. It's good, though. Do you want one? We can take it back to the room if you like. Cyverdon made a face.
No, thanks. You're more adventurous than I am.
I suppose I am, I agreed pleasantly. I finished the last of my supper, drained my tea. But you wouldn't know it to look at me today. I spent the morning in the temple like a good tourist, and the afternoon watching an entertainment in my room.
Let me guess.
Cyverdon raised an eyebrow, sardonic.
The one everyone is talking about. The heroine is virtuous and loyal, and her potential patron's lover hates her. She wins through because of her unswerving loyalty and devotion.
You've seen it?
More than once, but not for a very long time.
I smiled. Some things never change. Cyverdon laughed in response.
Apparently not. Songs any good?
Pretty good. You can watch back at the room if you like. But back in the room, she folded down the servant's cot, saying,
I'm just going to sit down a moment,
and was asleep 2 minutes and 3 seconds later.